they already did an evil plan just yesterday where shit was released when it wasn't supposed to be released because they're so fuck it with evil plans. They're just tell everybody we're going to... This is our evil plan and you're going to have to deal with it.
I'm more pissed off about the E15 gas. That's really...
It's because you don't have a uterus.
I'm really angry about it.
It's because you don't have a uterus.
Did you just assume I'm not a birthing person?
I assumed that you don't have a uterus.
Can you define what a woman is?
I'm pretty certain. I've seen your exterior parts, and either they exist naturally or they're very well
crafted. Can you define what a woman is?
So are you actually defining his gender now?
Yeah, I know. You're defining...
No, I'm defining his parts.
You're defining what a woman is. That's what you're doing. And we've established you can't go there.
Out of the gates.
I noticed how that was thrown out the window the second
this shit
happened.
What's really funny about this is by my measure, this is our 300th episode that we're recording right now.
Wow.
And in 300 episodes, I can't figure out not to lead off with bad stuff.
300 episodes.
You remember what the first one was, right?
Prince.
Right. What was the second one?
I'm going to go with an hour and a half.
Or 100. No,
that's like 450 hours of this horseshit.
Yes.
Which is really close to...
And that's not including the extrasodes.
That's like you could listen almost 20 days straight.
If not longer.
That's like crazy. Yes.
Please don't do it. It's not good for your mental health.
Yeah. No.
Strongly.
If you were to start at one and then go through all of them and then go through all of the extrasodes...
It would be the future.
Side effects.
You'd have a jetpack.
Side effects.
You got done
with it. Side effects include diarrhea, suicidal ideation,
or accomplishment,
brain explosion. Like, don't do it.
A lack of trust for the rest of humanity.
I got where there that would happen.
I don't know about that.
A lack of trust for us.
Large questioning of your own place in the world.
A severe need to go off grid. No more listening to the internet.
You'd severely question the use of your time.
When you reach that, that's probably the step before rock bottom.
Now, during COVID, when people had a whole lot of time on their hands, how many people do you think noped right out when they had nothing else to do? Zero. Like, okay, well, I can sit around and I can learn how to
speak a language using
masturbate with my left hand. Or I can listen to Ruined Heroes. Okay, so...
I think zero on the Ruined Heroes camp, yeah.
Zero, ambidexterity is going to be.
I think most people who tune into this within 5 minutes decide staring at a naked light bulb is better.
That's because
it's not on.
Within 5 minutes, we are rarely even coming close to talking about the topic. So it's only people who get the format that hold out anyhow.
Well, when we start talking about the topic, it goes downhill.
It does. Every single time. Even when we like the topic.
Even though it might not seem it, folks, this is actually the high point of the show. This is the best part of the show.
Which is why the extrasodes are fun, because it's just a half hour of this shit.
Yeah. Listening to Ruined Heroes is like buying a boat. It's only good two times. When you first start it, and then when you get rid of it. We are just like buying a boat. Like, oh, there's a new episode out. And thank God it's over.
Yeah, same can be said for a good lover. It's only good when you get it and when you get rid of it. In between then, they make you completely miserable.
You're not paying a prostitute for her time. You're paying her to leave.
You know, speaking of boats, like,
I can't sail. It's okay.
I actually got to track down a boat on the East Coast.
All right. So that's a kind of a convoluted off ramp we just went down right there.
So this guy loses his boat, and he says, "Hey, I moored my boat, and then came back and it was gone. Has anybody seen it?" And he's got
this boat jacked.
He's got an old picture of his boat sitting at a dock, and I'm looking at it, and I was like, you know, I seem to recall a little while ago somebody said, "Hey, I found this boat. Looks like some fucker took somebody else's mooring." And
latch his boat and let it float out to sea? Is that what they do?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's what you do.
What if you could do that? If you could do that with parking places, you'd be a bigger asshole.
I flicked back and forth between the pictures, and there were cleats on it and little scuffs and all of those kind of things. And I was like, hey, this guy has your boat over here.
Are cleats
the
jack that they put on your tire?
Yeah. It's just like that.
But, and, I have no idea. Just seriously.
So I was just like, yeah, this guy has it over here. I think it's pretty, you know, here's his. And I was like,
stereo's probably not in it anymore.
I was like, I think he's pretty a pretty cranky old guy based on the fact that he is using a AOL email address.
Oh shit!
Yeah, I was like, yeah, you're going old school.
You're talking at youngest. You're talking to a boomer.
Yeah. Well, you're
they're fresh out of fucks. I refuse to get rid of my AOL. That's fresh out of fucks.
That's the only reason AOL still exists, however.
They've got no new subscribers.
No. Nobody signs on to AOL now. They're just hanging out with 70-year-old people. They're stuck with it.
Yeah, there's all these are all
how the hell is AOL still around?
I'm saying it's the fuckers that just won't quit. Alright, on that note, let's get going. Okay? Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else listening, we are Ruined Heroes, a weekly, free, and self-produced podcast wherein the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, study like a guy who may like to bop around. John.
Fuck it. Just give me some. Just put me on a record or whatever. I don't care.
And Rupert.
I believe life begins at rejection.
Did somebody miss their therapy appointment today?
All right, so please subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It's free for you. It helps us in the algorithms and all that crap. To interact with us, we are RuinedHeroesPod@gmail.com, as well as easily found on Facebook and Twitter, where you get weekly hints.
I expect what's cool? Gmail's going to be AOL in 10 years.
We're going to be already Yahoo or something. Yeah. It's got to be in the Yahoo level.
Yeah.
I mean, Facebook's equivalent to MySpace now.
Pretty much. There's a big exodus going on. Anyhow, say hi, take guesses at the hints. We like all that kind of stuff. It's fun. If you would like to get extra content and help with the cost of the show, you can subscribe at patreon.com/ruinedheroes and get in starting at just $1 a month. So thank you to those of you who do give. It's fucking awesome, and we really appreciate it.
Yo, yo.
Intro.
Bum, 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 bum. I'm on the edge of my seat.
The topic. In the brief span of his life, crowded more living into it than any other human being. He was a man of tremendous physical appetites. He ate like a horse, drank like a fish, was as sexy as a rabbit. He was complete in the world, was interested in everything. He composed, painted, he loved machines, cars, he was a loving father. No one had such a love of life, and no one tried harder to kill himself. Robert Reisner said that. These are mostly biographers that I got the quotes from.
I think, did we do Lenny Da Vinci?
We did, Leo Dio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jim Morrison.
Mm. Right wheelhouse. The right wheelhouse.
Is it the right time period?
Morrison is way after this. Well, decades after this. Only decades, though. Whitney Balliet said this in a New Yorker article that is cited in the sources. He would eat 20 hamburgers in a row, drink 16 double whiskeys in a couple of hours, and go to bed with two women at once.
Does his first name begin with E?
No.
Not Ernie Hemingway?
No, but he's been long on the list and brought up a couple of times.
Wow, I thought I had it.
John keeps pooing that one. Right character, though. Like, that's the right kind of attitude. Ross Russell said this. The alto solos on those broadcasts opened up a whole new world of music for me. I'd known Jay McShann from the time he used to barnstorm in the Southwest. But the alto saxophone was new and years ahead of everyone else in jazz. He was into a whole new system of sound and time. The MC didn't even announce his name, and I didn't learn that it was the topic until after the war. There's a lot of really good hints in that one.
So this is a saxophone player?
An alto sax player at that.
Is this Bird?
Mm.
I would not I'm not entirely sure I would agree with the constantly living life to the fullest thing, but...
He was a gigantic man in every sense of the word. He was well noted as just kind of indulging in everything that he could. And we'll go through a bunch of it. Do you care about the last one? It doesn't matter much.
Let's hear the last one.
Okay. There was no serious attention paid to Charlie Parker as a great creative musician in any of the media. It was just horrifying how miserably he was treated. And this goes for the way that Dizzy Gillespie was treated and everybody. Leonard Feather said that. Thanks for letting me say Leonard Feather.
I don't know who the fuck Leonard Feather
is. I don't care either, but his name is Leonard Feather.
You know, see, I think that's
a running joke.
I think that's like a little weird because for no really good reason, I feel like Dizzy Gillespie, like trumpet was a very established instrument and saxophone wasn't.
At the time period.
No.
I can see that. I can see an argument.
I can see how you feel that way.
I can see an argument.
I feel like Charlie Parker kind of really established the instrument.
He changed the way that it was used entirely. Yeah. And we'll get into some of that. For the record, just historically speaking, at the time that both Dizzy and Charlie were working in it, the saxophone and the trumpet, especially in the jazz world, were extremely equally respected. Now, in concert world or symphony world or what have you, the saxophone is extremely secondary.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, you know, you have like, you know, Aaron Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man starts off with trumpets.
Right.
You know, there's endless...
Every march on the planet has
brass,
all the trumpets.
Music, yes. You know, any of that like pomp and circumstance sort of... music starts with trumpet. It's well established in the classical realm for centuries.
But woodwinds in the classical realm are always kind of a weird contrivance. It's like the clarinet for the goose in Peter and the Wolf. Or it's, you know, it's the bassoon noise or the oboe. It's like woodwinds in the classical world are weird.
Thing. But, you know, I'm just contrasting trumpet and saxophone, so
all right.
Maybe getting off on a weird tangent.
Especially before we've even done the sources. So sources, charlieparkermusic.com, which is apparently the official website, even though he's long dead. Biography.com, historicmissourians.shsmo.org, newyorker.com, that was an article I referenced earlier, and pbs.org. Born Charlie Christopher Parker Jr. on August 29th, 1920, in Kansas City, Missouri, to father Charles Parker, a black vaudeville performer, and mother Addie Boxley Parker, a Native American housekeeper. The family moved across the river to live in Kansas City, Kansas, in about 1927. So there's that goddamn Kansas City thing.
It drives me crazy.
It makes me so bonkers.
It drives me nuts. Would you just call them different names?
Right.
I don't even know. Is it all the same city? Or
it is literally the same city. Like it's
they
not,
have the same mayor?
I believe so.
Or do they have two? I don't
like,
know.
I think it's similar to Nogales, which drives me insane because that one's half of it's Arizona and half of it's fucking Mexico. Like that makes me even crazier. State to state makes a tiny bit more sense, but over borderlines makes me really upset. Anyway, they're living in Kansas City, Kansas. As an only child, his mother doted on him, and his life was reasonable, as dad had left vaudeville and started working as a Pullman chef. So, a chef on a train in a Pullman car. This did lead to a setback in Parker's, quote, normal life, as dad was working on trains and rarely home prior to leaving the family altogether. Which he did. Most stories say he had become a hardened alcoholic, and mom was also responsible for splitting the family up in 1932 when Parker was 11 years old. So, like, dad went home anyhow. When he was drunk. Mom said, don't come home anymore. Pretty standard, right? Why are you guys looking at me? I can't hear you. They can't hear you. Look at me like this.
That's just kind of a duh.
Duh is
duh.
Probably all the words we needed for that
duh.
One. Again, pretty fucking reasonable and standard, right?
I would think that, like, if you've got a Native American wife coming home drunk would be especially bad.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, she's probably
mildly racist.
She's probably seen it. No, what, alcoholism?
I understand.
On reservations and stuff, it's a real thing.
I understand. That's why I said mildly instead of just charging at you.
Huh, that's like, you know, you got some guy with like a Skinner flag hanging up and he's sniffing glue. You've seen it. Come on.
So to ease the young Parker's pain over the divorce, it is told that Addie, his mom, bought Parker a saxophone to occupy his time. Parker taught himself to play it.
And then proceeded to piss off every one of his neighbors.
Well, yeah, yes. Coming soon. But he would end up playing the baritone, the brass instrument baritone, a gigantic ass, somewhere between a tuba and a trumpet. If you know brass instruments, you know. Anyway, he would play the baritone in his school band and the high school marching band as well. As elementary school had been relatively normal, by the time Parker was 14 and about to enter high school, his addiction to the saxophone had gotten in the way of his studies. He would practice for hours on end, often to the dismay of his neighbors. Yes.
He pissed off everyone.
Yeah. Like, every story you read, they're like, neighbors fucking hated it.
Yeah. Well, you sound like you're doing unspeakable things to a cat, but it's not. Like, okay, well, is this child actually torturing an animal? Or, nope, that's just the Parker kid playing with that damn music box maker fucking thing.
Any reed instrument is difficult to get a good tone with.
The only thing worse is listening to a string instrument being learned.
No, I can listen to somebody learning guitar all day.
Well, a guitar, maybe, but like a violin, that's worse.
You mean a bowed instrument.
A bowed instrument is fair. Yeah. Fair. A bowed instrument is the only thing worse than listening to somebody learn how to play a fucking reed instrument. And I remember what I sounded like, and I picked up the horn, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and remember what I sound like even more so because it's been so long. It's a disaster. Terrible noises. The other thing that pissed the neighbors off is, like, mom worked nights, so that was his time to practice. So he was practicing at nights. He eventually quit doing the practicing at home, and he started going out to jazz clubs at night at 14 years old. And soon he was sitting in with some of the bands at 14.
That's punk rock.
That's pretty fucking punk rock, yes.
Getting in with Count Basie at 16, I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, again, coming soon, yeah.
I mean, come on.
And it should be noted, like, the Kansas City jazz scene is still kind of legendary.
Well, I mean,
it was super legendary then.
In this area, if you showed up to a club with an instrument...
Well, I mean, honestly, if you find a jam, there probably hasn't been one in the last 3 years, but if you found a jam before that and showed up with an instrument, they'd let you sit in.
Yeah.
Not if you're Miles Davis. He'll beat your ass to come walking on the stage.
It's only because he owes him money for cocaine.
Yeah, he
and slept with his wife.
He beat a bunch of guys' asses for coming out, and he was like, get the fuck off the stage, man. I'm doing this.
Also,
I don't blame him, actually. You know? It's kind of presumptuous.
Also coming soon.
Yeah.
Also coming soon.
Some fucking obnoxious sax player walking out on stage.
So during the time, Kansas
especially
City,
when they're 14.
Yeah, right? Some punk ass kid.
You know, that would have been cool. I would have rather seen, you know, rather than that Will Smith slap, I would have rather seen like Miles Davis slap Bill Clinton coming out on the stage.
There's
that would have been
something
hot.
Coming that you're going to really like. Directly in that vein.
Oh, no. I've read...
Directly in that vein.
I mean, I offered to you... Lend
you did,
you,
yeah.
Know, that, you know, so I know that Charlie...
I know you don't come in too cold.
Yeah.
So during the time, Kansas City had a very solid jazz scene, as I just mentioned, and many famous people were coming through. And Parker was inspired by the likes of Count Basie, who was a hint, and John just mentioned. Another thing that drove the scene was the Pendergast family running illegal booze halls all over the town. The jazz people liked to drink, the spirits, so opportunity was everywhere for the young Parker. This is when he picks up drinking, 14.
Well, you don't have a jazz club unless you have some booze there.
Right.
I mean...
Even during Prohibition.
Yeah. I mean,
what self-respecting musician is going to play an instrument without being fucking hammered?
What self-respecting person is going to walk out of the house with a beret on
Who's your audience? How do you have your audience? What are they doing? What is this, like a concert at the Royal Philharmonic? No, it's like, come on. No, people want to go there and have a drink and listen to some jazz band.
So after trying his freshman year in high school 2 to 3 times, depending on which story you read, he may have been a freshman twice, he may have been a freshman 3 times, doesn't matter. Parker dropped out of school at 15. His poor performance in school had been fueled by his growing love for playing jazz and his late nights doing just that. I would say that this is more of a career move than a dropout story. Like, there's lots of dropout stories. This is like, nah, dude at a very young age found his calling and went for it. So I'll give him that.
Either that or decided that, nope, this is a waste of my time.
Well,
I'm not going to let my education get in the way of my learning.
Right.
I'm going to learn me some music.
I'm not going to let my school get in the way of my education. But yeah, is the quote. But yeah, it is one of those situations where he realizes that the educational system isn't for him. And anything that is an educational, quote, system isn't for everybody. Can we just agree on that one? It doesn't always work for everyone.
That's so also just such a backhanded comment.
What? Huh? How?
Because it's self-directed learning, which sometimes doesn't actually pan out the way some people need it to.
But they always think it does.
Exactly.
They always think it does. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Guilty as charged.
So it doesn't always necessarily mean a good thing. I mean, it's you're right. Your education didn't get in the way of your learning.
Well, plus he's going to segregated schools in Missouri or Kansas.
Which really didn't mean he had
the best situation.
I have a feeling the schools were not exactly chote.
They may have had books.
Yeah.
So that same year, July 25th, 1936, still 15 years old, he married his high school sweetheart, Rebecca Parker Davies, or Davis. Because apparently Kansas, it's legal to marry at 15. I don't know.
Well, back then.
Maybe today. I don't know. I haven't been to Kansas in a while. Don't care about the marriage laws anywhere.
Back then, everybody's getting married at 16 or 17 or something. You know, it's par for the course.
All you need is some priest to say, hey, you know what? Go ahead there, kid. Good to go.
Well, I think they're Baptists. I don't know, but
it's possible.
We'll talk to the Justice of Peace when you're 18.
It's the right part of America. The couple would go on to have 2 children, but this relationship was doomed from the get-go. Parker had already gotten into heroin, and partially because it was adjacent to the jazz scene, and by 16 was a regular user. So he's 16 years old, he's now an alcoholic and a heroin user.
Well, they were living with the mom.
They were.
And then the mom threw him out.
Yes, again, coming soon. Again, coming soon.
Didn't you learn from your...
That's kind of harsh there.
Didn't you learn from what happened to Dad?
Yeah, like,
you're out too, buddy.
Daddy started traveling and drinking. You're fucking out too. Yeah, it happens. We're coming soon.
Makes me think that his mom definitely had some
background. Brooke, no bullshit. Not doing it.
So the third addiction that he had at this point in time was his addiction to learning the saxophone and playing jazz. He was, like, by definition of addiction, he was fucking addicted. He spent more time playing the saxophone than he did on heroin and drinking. Which is a, if you know the history of this guy, where we're going, that's a big deal. So, he was also
about some, like, drunk junkie practicing saxophone next door. That's got to be fucking horrible.
Don't move in next door.
Yeah.
Oh, trust me, that's never...
That's not going to happen. Yeah, that'll never happen.
Nope. When that thing was up for rent, you were talking about it. Nope, I'm going to nope right out of that situation. That is the absolute last fucking thing I need.
Me knocking at your door.
Knock. Yay, whiskey!
Yeah. All right. So Parker was also sitting in with Count Basie at this point in time. So he moved up. He's actually sitting in with one of his idols. And one night he was struggling to keep up in the song they were playing, even though he was an extremely talented sax player at the time. And someone, the drummer, whose
Joe
name
Jones.
I didn't write down. Okay.
Joe Jones. And
threw a cymbal at his feet.
Well, one of the stories is he was actually attempting to play a double time sax solo.
It was apparently a difficult piece that he was playing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, this is like a 15, 16 year old kid we've got who kills it, but at the same time, not right this second, maybe because too much heroin or whatever. But like, the drummer threw a cymbal at his feet and straight up gonged his ass off the stage. And Charlie Parker just like packed his sax and walked.
And didn't play for 3 months.
Yeah, he took a while off, which was also could be defined as a drug binge.
You think?
But he decided through that getting out of the Kansas City scene would be better, and maybe go to the New York scene. Maybe because there's more heroin. I don't know.
Because he'd done it all?
Foreshadowing.
Well, I mean, he's getting hit with like one of those jazz cymbals. Those are rough. It's like you got your Zildjian case.
Dude, somebody's throwing a Zildjian.
And that thing's going to come at you like a razor blade.
Somebody's throwing a Sabian at your fucking ankles.
Like, no, it's not like a Sabian. It's, you know, it's one of those really thin things. So it's going to be like a fucking...
No, I've seen. It's gonna like be like the odd job. Zildjians too.
It's like, right? Be like the odd job hat.
It is kind of the odd job hat. Too. Yeah,
you know.
I was going with the Chinese decapitator. It's this thing that it's attached to a rope. You throw it over it, lands on somebody's head. You pull the cord, and blades come out and decapitate.
Well, that's how thin those symbols would be.
Yeah, the Chinese were very interesting in their torture, yeah. in their battle gear.
I was just realizing that you lost me in that whole thing, but that's fine. It's okay.
Yeah, this guy could have just made it out of jazz cymbals.
It's still just like, imagine in the middle of an improvised solo, mm-hmm. somebody just throws a cymbal at your feet.
It's like you're in The Who with Keith Moon. It would be like that.
You're not too far off.
No, it's that. Except he's hitting with rock cymbal, which is heavier, so it's like not going to cut your leg off.
All right, is it a crash or a ride?
Yeah, either one. A sizzle. They're heavier.
I like sizzles because they have the rivets in them. They're so fucking cool. Just the engineering.
Those went out with the Hawaii Five-0 team.
These sound so cool. Anyway,
nobody has those anymore.
So later that year, Parker was on the road. Now married, a high school dropout, almost 16 years old, and a paid musician. And on his way back to a gig in the Ozarks, when the car crashed, the car he was in, the owner of the club bought Parker a new saxophone because his was destroyed in the crash. And they were on the way to the gig and really wanted him to play. This one happens to be a Selmer. Anybody knows instruments? Moving along. And Parker suffered traumatic injuries to his spine and ribs, for which he would be prescribed opiates, which is not helping the fucking heroin addiction thing, right?
Wow, it's like Purdue Pharma.
It's yes, actually. This wow. is kind of the beginning of some of that bullshit story.
Got hooked on Oxy in Kansas City.
Yeah. I mean, we're in the 30s, and yes, it is.
Got hooked on Oxy.
The prescribed opiates only drove Parker's growing addiction to heroin, and he would never again be free from the dragon on his back for any length of time. It is said that this is when he became a true addict. Good news is that it was common in the jazz world, so he would still be able to work for a while. Bad news is that it was a fucking heroin addiction, so, you know, I had to find a bright side somewhere. Parker would emerge...
It's kind of like people coming into work at, you know, in Eugene. It's like, okay, are they high on meth, or is it just weed? Okay, because if it's just weed, we're fine.
How open are their eyes? Like, right? The pupils, they're high, but, like, weed... Meth, you know.
I'm trying to figure out like how hard it would be to get a syringe in the 30s. It seems like that would be a really valuable instrument.
I think most of the jazz musicians were smoking their heroin at the time.
Yeah. You think so? Really?
Yeah. That's my guess.
Oh, isn't that like kind of
either that or if they had a rig?
It's dirtier heroin if you're smoking it normally. Yeah.
And are you going to get as addicted doing that?
Apparently, I guess. Apparently, like,
well, there's a will, there's a way.
I've smoked a rip of fucking opium in my life and never been addicted.
When there's a will, there's a way. You'll do it. And frankly, if they already did have a rig, that rig would be a very, very nice, and it would be just there.
Oh, it'd be glass. It'd be those glass syringes. That would be cool, man.
Those fuckers are expensive. You notice I don't have one of those in the medical cabinet right now?
Yeah, you know what?
Those motherfuckers are expensive.
You know what's weird? Those things used to wash.
I got a stainless steel
those
horse
things
syringe.
Used to wash up on my on the beach when I was in the 60s. It was crazy. You'd see these things and like you see it and it was just like this is really precisely made because to get the plunger to fit into a glass thing, it was like ground and everything. It was like a handmade little heroin addict deal. It's really nuts. That and a bunch of like tampon things. That would wash up. Sharks.
All of a sudden you're John Travolta in Pulp Fiction. Lots of sharks. But so going forward.
Lots of sharks, huh?
Yeah.
Lots of sharks. Did they have fins?
You have never smelled stink like a dead shark. That smells unlike any other fish.
Any dead meat eating animal smells way worse than any dead vegetarian animal. That's why we get to eat vegetarians.
Now, you come across like a dead deer or something like that, that is fucking incense and peppermints compared to a dead shark. Yeah. Or, it's just like a...
Same thing.
And it's not Nag Champa.
Yeah. Dead coyote, dead bear, whatever. Yeah, like dead meat eater.
Nothing holds a candle to dead shark.
Holy shit. So...
And I mean like 2 hours dead at a single. It's like fucking...
Yeah, they go downhill fast.
Those are very...
Put the motherfucker on ice.
Fucking smelly-ass fish, man.
So Parker would emerge from this isolation.
It's weird they don't taste that strong. It's kind of strange. I mean, you've had shark, right?
I worked at a seafood market for how many years?
It's like, in my world, shark is like shark. Swordfish. It's like... A dense,
it's denser kind of than thing. It's denser
it's,
than swordfish. Or
but it's
mahi,
not
yeah.
the it's not the fishiest tasting fish there is.
It's one of the most steak tasting fishes of all time.
Yeah,
which is one of the reasons I could actually eat it.
Yeah, but you have a dead shark sitting there,
and it's not actually a fish. And
a shark?
Kinda, it's not actually a fish.
That's a fish.
No,
nope. Stop it.
Nope.
Stop it.
It's not actually a fish. Okay. They're a different thing.
Okay, birthing
people. And they don't have bones because they don't have the calcium there. Anyway, but whatever. So back to Charlie Parker. So Parker would emerge from his isolation a whole new man, even if he was only 16 to 17 years old, perhaps because of the woodshedding he did or the drug inspiration. The Parker who left the stage a year or so earlier would emerge an even more talented musician. So he was playing with Basie at 14, talented, mm-hmm. and now he's a whole new level.
Yeah, now Basie's going to try to work with him.
This is where some of that. This is where some of that starts to happen.
Role reversals start happening.
Yeah, this would give him the push he needed to achieve his next step in the jazz game, playing with the up and coming artists of his time. In 1937, Parker was playing with a local phenom, Buster Smith, as well as many other names that rolled through Kansas City. He had just had his son and cleaned up his act, but that, as drugs can be, was temporary. He would soon be back on the dope and become unreliable enough that he was fired from this job. His mother, John's foreshadowing, whom he, his wife, and his child had been living with, got sick of his bullshit and tossed him out on the road.
Say ya!
Left with no income and no home, he sold his sax, or the sax he had gotten from the club owner, which was a Selmer, and left his family to head for New York City with a short stop in Chicago. Upon getting to New York City, he would struggle to get a job, but eventually got in as a dishwasher / busser at a diner and was able to hook up with Buster Smith again.
Okay, come on. It wasn't just a diner. It was Jimmy's Chicken Shack.
Well...
Come on, man.
My man with the facts.
The way he got to New York was hitching trains. It took him like 3 months to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time he got there, the cardboard in the bottom of his shoes was showing.
Well,
like, this is a man who showed up there like beyond destitute.
When you do that much heroin, you don't know if you're going east or west. You just get on one and say, oh, fuck, okay. Okay, then you nod off. The next thing you know, you're in Oregon.
The thing that's weird, it's like the heroin back then, they didn't have your Mexican heroin. It was all like
with the fentanyl in it.
It was all like your Afghanistan heroin, unless it was prescription heroin. And so I wonder what these guys were doing.
Anything whatever they heroin they could on.
Get. Yeah, like where's that question?
But like getting heroin in illegally from Afghanistan back then was like fucking nuts. That was like crazy. So like maybe it was prescription heroin. I don't know.
So by hooking up Buster Smith, he also ended up hooking up with Art Tatum, who is one of the goats in jazz piano. If you don't know Art Tatum, go listen to an album. Bring up your title or subscription and do it. It is important to note that jazz was smooth at this point in time and easy, roughly, until Parker hit the scene. He was still well known for challenging the rhythmic pace and speeding up that improvisation, as well as bringing complexity to the front. He started playing alongside Dizzy Gillespie, in I think it was Smith's band, but they were both new on the scene. And a path was set. What Dizzy and Parker were playing was not what everyone else was hearing. It was something new.
Well, jazz back then, like in the 30s, was more, you know, with guys like Count Basie and stuff like that.
It was almost big band.
It's more what we associate with big band, or if you've seen I Love Lucy, Ricky yep. Ricardo mm-hmm. at the Tropicana, yep. that kind of sound.
Which is really fun to play, but...
But like it involves like a large ensemble, much less improvisation. Certainly no dissonance.
And when you are, improvising, you're not dissonant. You're adhering to the chord structure.
It's like, almost more uplifting.
It's like better.
Wrong.
It's,
that was just for you.
There's just when Parker took over, it's this newer envisioning of jazz. It didn't have that uplifting, cheery, kind of happy... there really aren't words for it here. It wasn't
Depression-era
music. You couldn't dance to it.
Yeah, it wasn't Depression-era
music. That was
music,
the difference.
Like with the Flapper Girls.
Right, exactly.
You know, the stuff you heard in Paper Moon and stuff.
What Dizzy and Parker were playing, you couldn't dance to anymore.
Yeah.
And almost all the jazz before that, you could still dance.
Right.
But you can't dance to Charlie. If you dance to Charlie Parker tune, you look like a fucking hippie at a Grateful Dead concert. That's just what happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of acid happening there.
Even if you know the rhythms. In fact, especially if you know the rhythms, you truly look like some fucking dancing hippie.
These guys were like, yeah. They were like,
is the term.
They were like Rush.
Outside is the term. So it's somewhere in here that he picked up his nickname, Bird. Originally Yardbird, and attributed to a couple of things, maybe. Either his voracious...
Okay, there you go. You are going to get into it. Okay.
Either his voracious appetite for eating chicken, or the fact that he had hit a chicken on the way to a gig with a car. Either way, the name would not only stick... The name would not only stick, but become a theme in his song names and then his history. Wherever it came from, whether it was you could eat a bunch of fucking chicken or you ran one over, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, now he owns it.
And we get songs like Ornithology, and that's where it comes from. So, excuse me, he was playing anywhere that he could or that would have his 20-year-old stylings. And one of those places was a taxi dance hall. That's for you, John. Mm. Anybody that knows what a taxi dance hall is, that's also for you. He also divorced Ruffin in 1939. So, first marriage done.
Yeah, I guess it just wasn't working out, huh?
He wasn't home, and he was kind of high most of the time.
Well, his mom, when your mom throws you out of your matrimonial home, it might be over.
I know, right? Could you imagine?
It might be over.
You, your wife, your kid, all of you.
No. She just threw him out.
I think she.
I think the wife and the kid were still there.
Debatable. Not how I read it, but I'll agree with your story.
She's got a history of throwing out the bad men.
Yeah, either way, it's not really cool.
Because I think he goes back to her, tries again, but I could,
I think a bunch of years later, but we'll get there. So anyway, He was growing his name and would be given a recurring spot in Chicago in addition to the ones he was getting in New York City. Alas, in 1940, he went back to Kansas City to be with his family and mourn his father's death.
Yeah.
You're right, he did go back. While there, he would join Jay McShann's band. Jay McShann is a hint. The band would go on to be one of the first, or be the first black band allowed to play at a dance at the University of Missouri. Parker would also get exposure through the radio show that McShann's band was on, as well as make his first recording with the band. So now he's on literal records, right? This attention eventually got around to Dizzy again, and hearing the development of Parker's new sound, Dizzy convinced the band leader, Earl Hines, to hire him. This got Parker to leave McShann's band, and he stuck alongside Dizzy for a while in Hines' band. The two would leave Hines together in 1942 and join Billy Eckstine's band, where they had more musical freedom. And this is a serious level up. When you move from Hines to Eckstine's band, like, Eckstine was very well known in the world at that point in time.
Well, as soon as you get, well, a lot of people, if they're continually looking for a way to voice something that they haven't been able to get out of their system yet, and they continue to find new freedoms to do so, and then they finally hit the fucking lottery.
Well,
this which is kind of what Eckstine was. It was kind of hitting the lottery. It's
like this is one step before the lottery. Yeah. This is like learning how to play the numbers is what they've done right now.
Yeah. And that's what it is. This is where he got into it. It's like, okay, well, wow. Oh, if I can finally get the freedom to explore what the hell it is that's going on inside of, you know, my musical vision, there it is.
And that's exactly what they were chasing. It's like, where can I put out my new shit?
Mm-hmm.
That same year, Parker would take his second wife, Geraldine Scott. Good name. In addition, his addiction and odd work schedule and financial troubles and probably some other bullshit caused them to split in less than a year. Second marriage, done and gone.
Did he bother getting divorced at either time?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Either time? We're not done yet, motherfucker.
Well, yeah. It's like, or it's like, okay, well, I'm no longer in that city, therefore I'm no longer married.
And actually, to correct my answer, no, I don't think he bothered. I think the woman that was married to him bothered
somebody
to get divorced.
Put it in
but
the paper,
divorce
there you
fucking
go.
Happened. And, like, they took the kids and he was drunk and heroin addicted and playing jazz. So the groundwork for bebop had already been laid by Miles Davis, Thelonious Monk, and Max Roach, among many others. But this is when the fire got started in a whole new way. Parker's ability to play outside the standard four or eight bar solos, strong upbeat accents, and high test compositions changed the jazz scene immediately. So the ripples in the jazz world were noticed worldwide, but for some reason, Parker seemed to have leveled out in his fame. This aggravated Parker, but did not stop him from playing. It did help him increase his drinking and heroin usage yet again. So, just to circle back, an improvisational jazz composition is 32 bars. And then that 32 bars is repeated at the end. And in between, it's broken up into lots of people playing lots of squirmly shit. And Parker somehow mastered that at this young age. It was like what he was doing and the accents and the way that his playing would inspire other people to play was different than anybody in the world had done.
It's kind of like no matter how much you fuck around with something on the piano, go back to middle C and it'll come out okay.
Not wrong. Come back to your 32 bars.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
Well, I think this has less to do with Parker and more to do with like him being right place, right time with the advent of bebop.
It was very much that.
Because bebop changes. Bebop is like sort of the key change of jazz going from, you know, really melodic big band to much more improvisational stuff. And what happens with bebop is anybody's heard, like, Dave Brubeck, like, take the A-Train is, like, a good example, like, where with bebop, what happens is the bass and the drums solidify as the rhythmic section, except the drums move a little bit forward and start, like, accenting the first of the beat. Rather than being this, like, straight-up background instrument, the drums move much more forward and you know, sort of sounding off, like, the first beat or something like that to, like, launch somebody into a solo or something. The weird thing is that even though bebop revolutionizes jazz, it only lasts for, like, I don't know, 10 years or something like that. It doesn't really like, but in terms of what we think of as the classic jazz sound, most will hear bebop in their head when they think about it. Like, well, that's, like, take the A-Train.
That's how fundamental it was.
You know,
that's exactly that. That's exactly how fundamental it is. It's, even though it may have only been around for that 10 years, that 10 years was so freaking impactful that it set the standard on how to grow, how to deal
with it. Well, I think the weird thing is because the drums move so forward, you start getting into this thing where, like, hey, maybe jazz is going to get danceable. Maybe. And then you have, like, this Charlie Parker, or you have John Coltrane stuff, where, like, it's like, what the fuck is going
danceable.
On?
Not danceable.
No,
you can pray to this.
This back
you
to
can
dance.
Pray to it, but you cannot dance to it. And that style of playing has influenced every soloist possibly since then. Like, you can hear Parker styling and Steve Vai's playing. You can hear that bending of notes and changing of time within the rhythmic pattern that today, it's just, he changed the world with this kind of new band. And it's largely to blame him. Like, Dizzy was right there with him. A couple other people, too. Like, Monk opened the gates, but...
Yeah, then but, everybody stormed through them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Mingus and Coltrane and everybody followed after this shit. Well, and Miles was like, hell yeah, like that. Miles got on the train, even though he had predestined this thing.
Well, anytime anything is new, there's one person that's going to sit there and dip their toe in the water and then get their foot in, and then everybody sits there and realizes, hey, there's no sharks in there. And then it's just cannonballs.
Well, I think Miles Davis, like, I don't think Miles Davis follows any of this. I think what Miles Davis does is he cements it, because Miles Davis comes in with, like, the biggest selling jazz album of all time, Kind of Blue. And if you listen to So What, that is a thing where Miles Davis sets it up and he's got, like, four or five musicians, and it's like, basically, we're going to do a song with, like, a little bit of a piano intro, and we're going to do four solos in a row, and that's a song, you know?
That's your 32-bar standard
construction, so,
yeah.
You know, but it's four solos in a row, which is, like, groundbreaking when Miles Davis does it, but he makes it, you know, still in the bebop sound, where it's, like, it's kind of danceable, but you're going to look like a retard dancing to it. You know?
Again, you're going to look like a hippie at a great word check.
You feel like it's, yeah, it's going to move into danceable. And, like, so you get out on the floor and the next thing you know, spaz.
Whoa, okay, back off the floor with you, kid.
Yeah.
Put the beret back on.
Yeah.
So
it's like they put a dance floor out there just to tease people, and then there's bouncers that pull them back all the time.
Well, basically, it's like one of those things why, like, chicks dig guys who say they're really into jazz.
Not working for me.
Yeah, no. So, doesn't really work too well.
They're into jazz, not play jazz.
Chicks are into 20-year-old guys who say they're into jazz, but once you're past about 28, chicks
they're like, no,
they
now he's got big
you.
Speakers that cost more than my
you.
Car, and I'm done
they
with
hate you.
When you're talking about jazz on vinyl, it's like, look at the new print I just got in. I had to pay $95 for this, and it's only slightly scratched.
So the development of bebop gave Parker one more nudge towards fame.
Why don't I listen to the Go-Go's?
We got the beat.
Actually,
baby.
Belinda.
We got the beat.
Belinda Carlisle won a Grammy.
Okay, let me ask
this
you.
Year.
Do you think
Belinda Carlisle won a Grammy? You asked.
Do you think that Joan Jett is good?
Since we're doing the Let's Talk Louder and Louder.
You asked.
No, you interrupted. And
I
so
answered your question.
I didn't ask a question.
Yes,
I didn't
did.
Ask a
what
question.
What happened to the Go-Go's? I started answering.
It was I didn't say that.
We'll say what happened to the Go-Go's rhetorical.
Okay, you talk. You do all the talking.
So, the development of Bebop
does not understand the virtue signal bell.
Gave him one more nudge towards fame, which he kind of needed, but his addiction was in the way of his financial stability. Good news, again, is that he and Dizzy had apparently invented a new genre of jazz and were able to set out on their own solo projects, so he gets to lead his own bands finally. The two set out on a tour. Parker would show up late, high, maybe both, or not at all. And that's kind of the bad news.
Yeah, there's a Venn diagram there that doesn't work out so good.
Yeah. It's kind of like all of those are not desirable as a bandmate.
Yeah, there's high and late. And right there, it's not at all.
Or not at all. Like, not at all, maybe is better.
And the not at all can be a really, really big part of that Venn diagram.
So the tour ended in L.A., and Parker would stay there. The main reason Parker would stay in California is that he had collapsed in a nervous breakdown and had been put in rehab. Some say it was a mental facility.
It was a mental facility.
Some say it was drug rehab.
I don't think they had drug rehab then.
I don't think.
For black people?
Definitely
I don't
not.
Think so.
Actually, that is a racist point I will let you totally have.
No.
Because you're right. They definitely did not have drug rehab for black people.
I don't think so.
Like, they had drug rehab for Kennedys, which meant lobotomy.
Yeah, that meant. So, not really a step up. More
actually,
expensive.
Easier
more
to, expensive. Easier to survive than a fucking lobotomy.
Well, and some drug rehabs for people like Kennedys were just, okay, we're going to. You go live in Corsica for a while.
We bought and a piece of property. You stay over there.
Yeah, we'll have the wine shipped into you.
Man, I would love that. If somebody would declare me mentally incompetent and send me on a vacation for the rest of my life, I would love that. That'd be great. If you guys got a notion, there you go.
John.
We'll just set you up in a, we'll set you up in a villa in Italy.
I think he's speaking directly to us.
That sounds really good.
You can tend your grapes and...
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take it. I'll take it.
God.
The intervention.
Just imagine, you know, the workshop you build will only be for shit you want to make for you. You don't have to sell anything.
that's called arts and crafts
ever.
Time, yo.
Right?
Greatest thing.
He could
ever.
Just do like watercolor splatters or whatever he wants to do. It's arts
so
and crafts.
So the only time that UPS
no
delivers,
lathe.
It's gonna be great.
They don't give you sharp tools.
You
don't get a lathe.
Yeah, I know.
You don't
yeah.
get you yeah. know any of the stuff you like.
But like at 11:30, it's like let's put our heads down our desk and then we're gonna have juice and crackers afterwards. It's gonna be so fucking great.
Oh, you get the fold out pee mats.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
All of a sudden, he's Jack Nicholson and flying over a cuckoo.
I live to be declared mentally incompetent.
Yeah, in a villa in Italy.
I mean, I already am, just not declared. You know, I need that endorsement on my driver's license.
So you wouldn't have a driver's license.
I have a bicycle license.
They don't... You would make one.
Yeah.
Never mind. I got license. There. So, I mean, it was very clear at this point...
You would have...
Dude, he had one of those black and the silver safety. Almost.
It would have one of the neon pink mohawks.
Those helmets that were almost Cylon helmets that we could get back
glitter
in the
vests.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
God.
Oh, fuck. All right,
so. I just want to buy you like a Schwinn from Goodwill just to see you fix it up and see what happens.
I'll practice. Do you want to be my friend?
Oh, God.
Stop practicing. Just stop.
Don't be my friend.
No, I don't.
No friend?
No longer. No longer. Let's, I don't want it. No.
Let's go fishing.
Okay, fishing. You got me.
You're my friend. You're my friend.
So, anyway.
Yeah, why do I get this feeling that Lenny's going to go see some rabbits?
Oh, not okay.
I'm sorry. Was that painful?
No, the rabbit thing was a little hard. For a couple of reasons. A, mice and men, but... So it was clear at this point that the many years of drinking and drugging had caught up to his fragile mental state. So, again, whether he was in rehab or a mental facility, it was probably a little both either way. After sobering up and regaining some stability, Parker extended his stay in California when he met Doris Snyder, Snyder with a Y, because it makes it sexier, in 1948. She would become his third wife.
Wouldn't it be Snitter if it was an I?
I don't know. Ask D.
Snitter? D Snitter?
Well said. Anyhow, so Doris Snyder. And
did
he
she want to rock?
Can I... You wanted to be more than halfway through, and at this point we're not going to get more than halfway through.
I'm driving this thing off a cliff like I was James Dean.
You are. You are a Porsche spider-driving fucker right now. He extended his stay in California when he met Doris Snyder. She would become his third wife, but Parker would get back to his heroin use, and the marriage would last just less than a year, again. The divorce only helped him increase his usage, again. So, like, I don't know how much you can level up your heroin and alcohol usage, but apparently three times.
Wasn't the previous marriage around a year?
Yeah.
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 Man.
The first one's like 4 years or something.
Okay, this is the reverse when women are mistaking psychosis for depth.
It does seem, well, actually foreshadowing again. There's going to be some more of that shit coming soon.
Does this have, like, a geologic period name for it? Because, yeah, it has flipped. It has flipped, definitely, where men are making the same mistake with women. But, yeah, the vagina scene period.
Oh, fuck! Oh, my God. That may be my favorite thing you said.
Like ever in my life.
Yeah, like not even on mic. Because I love a great pun, but oh my God, the vagina scene period?
Thank God.
Holy shit.
Thank God we don't make custom t-shirts. Ruined Heroes, the vagina scene.
Oh man, if we still had the ability to do that, there would be a t-shirt available like in 2 days. Oh my Lord.
Vagina.
Fucking A, the vagina scene period. It's spelled vagina, S-C-E-N-E, right?
Yeah, traditional spelling.
So, by this time, Parker was essentially houseless. He would live in motels, at friends' homes, and even once in a while pay a cab to let him literally sleep in it. Yeah, not a great life.
That's maybe pretty expensive.
I mean, yes.
In L.A.?
Can you imagine, though, this...
L.A., New York, Chicago, he's traveling.
Seems like it'd be pretty expensive cab ride, you know.
Yeah. 5 hours.
At this...
Low self-respect.
In this year, in this era, black musicians were sort of allowed a little more leniency than non-black musicians were.
Yeah, but they couldn't stand. So, they couldn't stand. Like cabs would pick them up.
They could
shit.
Get cabs. They were a little. There was famous. There was famous. And can you imagine what one taxi cab driver would say? It's like, yep, Charlie Parker slept in my cab. Imagine
in the 40s. Wow.
Well, imagine the stories he could tell for tell his
the cab kids. Driver could tell. Yeah.
It was a little more.
I don't know. Like.
I mean, that word of mouth fame was the way that it happened back then.
See, nowadays there'd be a Facebook group said, whose cab did he sleep in tonight?
All right, but to bring it into the millennium, I think it was the millennium, when the cute guy that used to do rom-coms got caught with a hooker in a cab.
Oh, Hugh Grant.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, it's not that different.
Like, this is a black musician in the 40s, and that's Hugh Grant, a middle-aged white man.
White English man. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different.
It
could just be me, y'all. But
there isn't a Facebook group of saying, okay, well, Hugh Grant got blown in the back of my cab, whereas in today's day and age, if Charlie Parker is like, oh, God, he slept in my cab last night. Check this shit out.
I bet there's Reddits on Jussie Smollett. Is that closer? Does that help you out a little bit?
I think you go to different parts of Reddit than I do.
I don't go to Reddit.
Well, you just did something.
I think the closest thing would be that Hugh Grant did my career's flagging, I'm going to get caught in a cab with a hooker and get some press. And that's what he did. And then Eddie Murphy was like, I'm going to get caught in a cab with a transvestite hooker. And that didn't work.
Well, because he was signing with Disney soon.
And then, you know, he wound up doing donkey voices after that, you know? I
mean, and made a grip-ball money.
And it's fucking
hilarious. He made a lot of money, but like...
He made it. So I guess the tranny hooker in a cab worked.
I mean...
He just had to re-envision his career at that point.
So back to degrading yourself.
Degrading.
Yes, degrading. I said it all together.
Degrading is actually a better word than the real word.
Denigrating?
You said degrading, which is not
I
a word.
I know that I said degrading.
But I'm saying that, like, it's a better word
better
than the real word.
It does sound a little rougher, huh?
Yeah, it does.
So, all right, so...
We're spitty.
Back to degrading himself. Parker would be known to sell or hawk his saxophone for drug money, only to get another one somehow. So, like, club owners would buy one or he'd borrow one. Like, one of the crazy things about Charlie Parker's sound is that he played any horn that was available. So you can't nail it down to that horn sounds that way, which is unusual. Because, like Ornette Coleman only played Selmers. Or
everybody has a... They have their instrument.
Yeah,
they
their
have
instrument.
Their. And they name that sumbitch. There's Lucille. Okay. You got.
Right.
You know.
Lucille's a perfect example. Yeah. And I read one quote that says, like, he'd play any Sears and Roebuck saxophone that showed up.
So.
Oh, wow.
Essentially, what you're saying is Charlie Parker would blow anything.
Yes. And he'd be really fucking good at it.
And obviously do it well.
Every single time.
And he blew it well.
Well, if you're blowing anything, you get good at it, right?
Because if you listen to his recordings, like, there's some that he's playing on a con. There's some he's playing on a Selmer. There's some he's playing on a buffet. There's this
Well, you adapt.
He's a little geeky.
Right, but you get used to blowing anything that walks in.
He did
in.
Have a unique thing. So saxophone players get that. Attached to their mouthpieces.
If you're
and Parker was known for playing one of the hardest reeds available.
Because if you're
and so we just carry that with him and sell the horn.
If you're
and how much is it?
If you're in a club
and you can just lay it down and say I can play anything in the world.
If you're in a club, you want to blow a hard reed. Any hard reed.
As long as it's long and slick and smoothly sanded.
Yeah. Well, these are...
I'm out.
These are largely... He's largely blowing a hard reed from France. This is mostly French reeds.
Most of them are French.
Yes.
Yes.
How socialist was it?
Lavaz was my chosen brand.
Yeah.
That was a socialist
which is
fucking sax
French.
Right there.
Like, again, we're getting a little geeky. Anyway, so the fluidity of his life.
How come there's no great French saxophone players?
Because they were too busy blowing
because
other things.
Because everybody goes to France to play jazz. Nobody gets born in France.
But they're making all the reeds. And they're making a lot of the instruments.
I don't know.
What the fuck is that?
Arrogance.
Honestly.
They're like the China.
We are too good for
this
you.
This is the China of the jazz world.
This is a
world.
Geek level that I've not entered.
But they're the China of the jazz world.
I'm concerned that I don't have an answer for you.
The China.
It's fucked up.
The China.
I think it's because you just like any good commie. Any good commie, which is a jazz musician, ends up in France eventually. So they know.
So they're like catering to them. They're just selling this shit. They
they
gotta
be buying like China bamboo to make the reeds out of or something. Right?
Kerouac called Parker one of the the first of the hipsters.
He quite probably was.
So going straight back to France, there you go.
Well, a lot
there's
of jazz,
where the hipsters started.
A lot of jazz instruments, so like all
coffee,
your,
cigarette smoke, and heroin, buddy.
There you go.
They made in France. That's sweet and sour pork of the jazz world.
All right.
Peking duck.
Sweet and sour pork.
Low main pizza.
Anyway.
That low main pizza was
come on,
good.
Man.
That low main pizza was good.
You can't be throwing the low main pizza under the bus
and the
like
Edith
that.
Edith Massey hot dog. That's a beautiful thing. Those things were fucking fantastic.
I'm not getting into that right now.
Oh, you're Mr.
So anyway, when he was going to Europe in 1949, he did a tour, and it finally got him some recognition that he felt that he earned. The Europeans actually saw him as sort of a legend, even if he was not yet 30 years old. So this is, what, 1947, 49, somewhere in there. He was also leading most of the bands he played in. He would still record and perform with his longtime jazz compatriots, but he had gotten enough cred, even through all the addiction and mental health issues, to get his own bands. Which is, like, when you don't show up and still have your own band...
You're Axl Rose.
Well done. Excellent
Eddie Van Halen, Sammy Hagar.
Nah, Eddie showed up. He showed up high, but he showed up. Anyway, he would still record. I did all that. The continued erratic behavior.
About Eddie, and then he starts losing his shit.
The continued erratic behavior actually got him banned from Birdland at one point, which was a club named in his honor. Like, it was named Birdland because Bird. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, we can't with you.
You
anymore.
You get banned from a club.
That's like Tyler Gemini Birdie.
That's named after.
Yes, yes, it's exactly like that. What were you saying?
Except you're a cancer.
You get banned from a club named after you. So he's basically living Groucho Marx.
Yes.
I don't understand the reference, but
yeah.
In about 5 minutes you'll get it.
Yeah,
keep going.
This is more or less how his life would continue for the next 3 or 4 years. One difference is that he fell in love yet again. This time it was to a fan, Chan Richardson.
Chan? Is that a man or a woman? I don't know.
He's really good with the names.
Is that like, it's just like a birthing person.
It's a female. Oh. Like if you watch Bird, it's
a birthing person.
The woman that he's with during most of Bird.
Chan. Chan what?
Richardson.
Chan Richardson?
I know.
What the hell kind of
Again,
name is that?
He's really good with the name.
Is this in France?
I don't remember. Anyhow, the two would live together, still often in hotels or short-term apartments for a while.
Yeah, good idea.
The backseat of a cab is going to get really, really tight with that sax there, too.
Like, hotels and motels is a step up from backseat.
How many saxes did he leave in the trunk of a cab?
Oh, dude. No, like, I didn't even write it down because it hurt me personally. Apparently, he'd get fucking loaded and throw saxophones out of hotel room windows and smash them on the street and shit. And, like, that just hurts me as a person. And so, I didn't, like, it was... He's probably at sax number 20 right now or better. Anyway,
Part 4?
Yeah, so the two of them would live together in those hotels and short-term apartments. They would have two kids. Their names were Pree, P-R-E-E, and Baird, B-A-I-R-D.
Wow. It's like they're Hollywood movie
stars.
The
earlier two kids' names were, like, normal-ish, and these were, like, I gotta mention them.
Yeah, I feel like I heard these names at the Johnny Depp trial.
Come on, When the mom starts out as Chan, you're not going to have a standard name.
Well, to be...
And was it Baird or Bard?
Baird. B-A-I-R-D. Okay. Baird. And to be certain, I do believe that Chan was of Asian descent. So, like, it was probably correct.
Why do you believe that?
I don't know, because I watched a mockumentary made by Clint Eastwood at one point in time, or read a bunch of shit this week.
Because everything you read on the internet is true.
Basically,
including everything we say. Believe it.
Basically, because I've done some research, I'm mildly more credible than your... I don't know, dude.
I've actually read a book on the guy, dude. I once threatened my kids with naming them hyphen space.
Backslash. Hyphen space backslash.
I think hyphen space would be a fucking great name.
All right, Elon.
Be like, okay, hyphen space.
Yeah. If I ever have a kid again, I think it's going to be named Xerxes.
If I ever have
just because it fucks with people.
If I ever have a child again, I'm just going to name him.
Hymen Lemestra.
If you ever have a child again, I'm probably executing you and the child.
If I ever have a child again, I'm going to name them Tyler, just so I can yell at them.
Gun laws are still good.
Actually, if I ever have another pet, I'm going to name it Tyler. Bat Tyler. Bat Tyler.
Every time you got a new cat, it goes, meow, meow, meow. Come on, let's role play. Meow.
Bat Tyler.
Meow.
Bat Tyler.
Meow.
Bat Tyler.
Boom to the head.
It works. Actually, Tyler is a good pet name. Actually, all of our names are pretty good pet names.
True. I wouldn't mind a dog named Rupert.
Yeah.
I'd kick it in the head frequently.
Yeah, I grew up.
I wouldn't actually do that. You know what I'm saying.
I grew up next
not
to
it. Not on purpose.
I grew up.
Kicked that dog plenty of times in the head.
Trip over it.
Fuck. No wonder your dog's kind of getting ditzy. Doot. Doot.
The neighbors next to me had a dog, a killer German Shepherd named Rupert. It was fucked
on purpose,
up,
or did they move in with the dog?
Yeah, it was just just straight up coincidence. He's the only other living being I've ever met named Rupert. Even though everybody's heard of the name, nobody's ever actually met anybody named
it. I gotta say, you are the first.
Yeah.
But popped a cherry for me. Okay?
But you have heard of the name long before meeting me. You know, I don't know what the hell, how you have a name everybody's heard, but nobody's met until me, and me with the fucking German Shepherd.
How many Betsy's do you know?
They're yelling at several. Lots.
How many Betsy's do you know?
One.
See? That's how. Generational name, man.
I don't think that worked. Whatever you were doing for a layup there, it didn't quite work.
I wasn't laying it up.
Too short to play basketball.
I can jump.
I think there was
White boy, you don't jump.
I can't play basketball, but
white
I can't
boy, you don't jump.
I can jump, but I can't play basketball.
There was a lot of rim there, so work on the balls the next time.
Cool.
Thanks.
All right, so... odd thing about Parker at this point is that these two kids, however, seem to stabilize his life a little bit again. And the couple finally found a place to live. They got an apartment.
Well, if you notice, there's a common thread there. Every time that he starts getting into a relationship and he spends just a little bit of time trying to get his act clean, but his demons come back to haunt him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's
yes.
exactly
that's
what it
exactly,
is.
Exactly.
Precisely what's going on.
Exactly.
It's not that he doesn't want to be an alcohol heroin fucking monster.
It's pretty classic.
In his head, yeah, he does want to be a reasonable, everyday individual, but...
Yeah, he really did. He really... And he tried a lot more than is exacerbated in this whole exacerbation.
Yeah, he really wanted to. But this is the demon that is addiction. It always comes knocking on your door.
Yeah, I mean, you read a biography of this guy, and it's like, this guy is like classic... addictive, self-destructive behavior.
It's absolutely the self-destruction cycle.
Yeah, where he goes back to it because it's a combination of I'm not worthy, let's give up on myself, and I feel normal here.
And this
I feel normal fucking up.
This leads back to that Hintero quote where nobody ever tried so hard to kill themselves.
Yeah.
He just was destructive.
Yeah.
He could never find normal or... level, right? Because the sun does not mean everything is sunny, while Parker was on tour in California, because the sun is out, does not mean everything is sunny. While Parker was on tour in California again.
That was a fractured fairy tale. Did you write that?
Yes, I did.
I should slap you for that. I've had men shot for that.
What's really bad is I didn't punctuate it correctly.
It was terrible.
That's a shocker.
But, there is nothing. But you're going to have to listen to it one more time because I haven't finished the after the comma part at the end.
Like when they first.
I ended with some shit when that's going to make you grammatically angry too.
When they first translated hieroglyphics, it was more lucid than that sentence.
Okay.
So that was so hideous.
Zahi Wass couldn't fucking.
Bad Tyler! Bad Tyler!
No. You still don't understand that damn bell.
You do not understand the bell.
I just like using the bell. So because the sun is out does not mean everything is sunny. While Parker was on tour in California again in 1954, he received news that his 2-year-old daughter, Pri, had died.
Wow. Pri's dead. Stop. Come back soon. Stop. Sober. Stop. Was that the extent of it?
Parker immediately turned to drinking and heroin again.
There you go.
Which became the end of his relationship with Chan and subsequently his remaining son, less than 1 year old. So his last child and his last baby mama are gone. And
he just snapped.
Yeah.
He snapped and... She did what Mama did, said, get the fuck out.
I mean, he's truly volatile. It's very clear.
Plus, her name's Chan. She can get any guy with a name like that. I'll marry her right now. She's probably like 120.
Does sound like she was kind of hot. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of, the name's doing something for me.
Chan.
He took a total downturn. And started drinking copious amounts of red wine, which caused his ulcers to flare up because, like, the hard liquor didn't do it as much. It takes an educated alcoholic to know that. He also attempted suicide a minimum of once. I read readings up to 3 times.
How?
Drinking iodine.
Whoa, seriously?
Yeah. That's what I read. It's the internet, yo. But, yes, drinking iodine.
Because I think you're a post-iodine child.
I remember iodine. And I have some in my med kit. Probably not great, but, you know.
But, like, there were 2 things going on at the time of... First of all, like, in terms of, like, topical antiseptics, there were 2 things. A bottle that just straight up said iodine and another bottle that said mercurochrome.
Both. Oh, shit, mercurochrome. Uh-huh.
And both of them had the skull and crossbone symbols on it.
Yeah, like, don't give this to children.
And when you were a little tot, you had seen endless Bugs Bunny cartoons with the skull and crossbone symbol on it, and that meant, get the fuck away. Don't even be in the same way. I'm down. I can tell you she's got a caboose like a freight train that like I won't.
No.
Yeah.
Just judging on her genetic disposition, I bet she does not have a caboose like a freight train.
Oh, I think so, my friend. You're talking to somebody who brings the freight trains into the yard and that's that's something I would put that one in dry dock. God, I'm an asshole.
Put it up so you can replace some boards and paint it again.
Baby, when you bend over, I want to see a fucking Clydesdale. That's awful. Awful.
So what was awful is that his daughter Pri had died. I didn't dig up why. I looked, and it looks like it may have been buried. I don't know why. Either way, Jesus. Parker immediately turned to drinking and heroin. And this was the end of his relationship with Chan.
She's got that bangs thing. That what is that? Who's that? Who's that?
Betty Page.
Yes, yes, yes. She's doing the Betty Page thing. It's period appropriate, but still doing the infantile bangs thing. That's kind of cool.
So, Barker at this point in time was kind of living sofa or hotel to hotel again.
Or wife to wife.
Well, no, he ran out of wives. But he'd met this lady. Dude, it's Italian. So drink right now before I even say it.
Fiorello so, LaGuardia.
No. Panonisa? I don't know. She was called Nika. Right there.
Panonosia.
Panonosia
Nika.
I don't know. He was dating
King Water?
He was dating
King
some
King Water? That's a fucking
it's coming.
Fake name.
She was named after some fucking pasta, whatever. I don't
know.
Yeah. They called her Nika. Her last name was D. Koningswater, which that one I can say.
Wow, an Italian German mix. Who'd have thought?
She was also
in the
called,
40s.
She was called the Jazz
Koningswater.
Koningswater, Nika Koningswater.
King,
yeah,
basically King's Warder.
Yeah,
she was called the Jazz Baroness.
Why?
Like, I think she was a patron.
Oh, he married money?
No, he didn't marry her.
Jesus,
he dated money.
Yeah, look at her.
Oh, that's a girl with money. Oh,
that is
that girl's fucking assembled.
That's a girl with money. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is European money. So you want to talk about old money? There's old money,
and then there's
old
that
money.
Kind of fucking money.
Yeah,
there's
old
money for the 600 years
like,
old.
If you trace it back far enough, she's probably related to Napoleon. And like
this is spiriting away money. This is like World War II gold bullion money. She's hiding. You know, that's what that is.
So
that Nazi money, that's like
and remember the time. It's like 1954. So she's
fuck yeah,
just post speakeasy hot chick. Okay?
Yeah, well, exactly.
And they call her Argentina. They call her Nika. She was a close friend of his, and
well,
then
he's stupping her.
And
so I think
no,
she's a pretty close
he's
friend.
Not because he was not physically well, and he died while laughing at a Tommy Dorsey juggling act. On his first venture from his bedding days, he fell ill at her house, and she let him stay. He like hung out, didn't move, got up, watched some of this fucking Tommy Dorsey act, and then died on her sofa on March 12th, 1955.
That sounds like it's cleaned up a little bit, but okay.
The coroner decided that pneumonia was the cause.
And bleeding ulcers.
A little bit of a catch-all there.
The coroner also decided...
Is that like Stevie Nicks checking in during the tour for exhaustion?
The coroner also decided that he was somewhere between 50 and 60 years old. The truth is that he was only 34 at that point in time, and the drugs and alcohol are what made the coroner believe he was half again that age.
Yeah, when, you
well,
know...
twice that age.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
half of...
Well, no, the coroner thought he was 60 and he's really 40.
Half of 60 is 30, I think I said it correct.
No. Yeah, I don't think the coroner thought he was 30. The coroner thought he was 60.
Yes, the
made the coroner think that he was twice his real age.
This is where your book learning don't work.
That's fair.
you know, when you spend that much time just fucking killing your system, your liver, your kidneys, everything is shriveled up into this little tiny ball of hatred, and it's rebelling against your body.
The only things that seemed to work was his fucking esophagus and stomach. The rest was kind of fucked.
You know, I'm gonna guess
his
he was
lungs,
a smoker.
I'm gonna guess
he was a smoker.
He was a very heavy smoker.
Might as well.
And he was able to fucking belt out the way he did. If he was able to hold a sax and play the way he did, he must have had extraordinarily large lungs. Because that fucker, good God.
Well, I mean, every now and then you meet him like those heroin addicts who are trying to quit smoking. It's always a thing for me. I love that. It's like, wow. Interesting.
That's the one you're going to go with.
It's always like... You know,
that's how you're going to start your little. Okay, you know what? As long as you start your way on that road, that's cool. But you might want to take the first exit, not the third.
Exactly. Like exit number one would be good.
Yeah, get the first on ramp, not the fourth one.
So, although Parker's life was short, fast, and full of hard times, Parker had become one of the most historically significant jazz musicians of all time. His rhythms, pacing, and phrasing changed what people believed jazz should sound like. The real tragedy is that most of his life, he was not seen as the genius he was due to mental illness and addiction issues. Clint Eastwood made an amazing movie, Bird. I'd recommend you watch it. Made only better by Forest Whitaker's portrayal of the late Parker. And there has been an opera called Yardbird made about his life. He has been honored in artwork by many people like Jean-Michel Basquiat. Another fascinating story that we may touch on at some point in time.
Sometimes a blind squirrel gets a nut, dude. Well done.
Thanks.
I hope we don't cover that. But
as we may cover Basquiat, because Basquiat is
hideous.
Fucking him. He's post-war all. So anyway, he's been honored by Basquiat as well as many other writers, or many writers and artists and like everybody who is an artist respects Charlie Parker, and I think that's kind of a hard line. Like, it takes a lot to understand where his head was, what he was doing, and why. And I think the drugs were part of the reason he was able to break so free of the norm. But anybody who wants to be outside creative, to use a jazz term, listens to Parker, loves Parker, and is inspired by him. And he has changed music forever.
We touched on it earlier, and I think that one of the biggest things we have to really look back on here is that this guy wanted family. He wanted a sense of normalcy, but he wanted to have his cake and eat it too. He wanted to be able to be just go after music and go after that sax and, you know, explore and be free with that. And he was able to get that, but it was at the cost of heroin. And it was at the cost of heroin very, very, very early in life. And with his dad being kicked out, he still wanted that sense of normalcy. And that heroin, that helped him get through that little period. And heroin has always been the thing that got him through. And so anytime anything bad would happen, he'd go right back into it. And it's really easy to sit there and look back and criticize and, you know, come up with all of these reasons as to why he did what he did. And frankly, I don't know. I didn't live his life. I have a suspicion that what he wanted to do was just be able to explore his music and have a family at the same time. He just didn't know how to. And every time something bad would happen, he would have that demon that would come up and comfort. And that demon was his family. That's what his family became. And that demon became more important than the physical family that he had at the time.
So, I am not the world's biggest fan of saxophone music. But, you know, I like Charlie Parker. And he's really the dawn of true improvisational music in the Western world. And it's kind of, interesting to me because, you know, it's... You know, he does it, and it's good, and it moves us out of big band, you know. I like big band music, too, but, you can't have 20 guys all improvising. You know, you need a smaller thing. And Charlie Parker definitely moves us out of there, and he's really kind of pretty much the first to really push the envelope on that. What I find interesting about it is oh my God, oh, he's such an innovator and stuff. And he basically gets back to, you know, where Indian classical music had been for centuries before. So interesting. This sounds like something that friends do.
Well, I thought we were friends.
I'm extremely uncomfortable with that.
I know. Do you know?